Hello everyone, welcome to episode 148 of the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, and today we're talking about real versus fake inner work. Just to mention, before we get going, that you might also like to listen to my episodes, Key Principles for Psychological Work 1 and 2. Those are episodes 144 and 147, released earlier this month. Want to say that there is an effective way of doing inner work, and there are ineffective ways of doing inner work. And by the time we've finished today, you're going to have a clear litmus test for whether you're doing real or fake inner work, and we're going to go through lots of examples so that you know exactly how to spot it. In my opinion, modern psychology is in a little bit of a mess, and you can go down a lot of wrong paths, which is to say that you can spend years and you can spend thousands of pounds or dollars on or euros or whatever you are in the world on a wrong path and chasing your tail. So we're going to dive in, starting with the first few key principles that define real inner work as I see it. Just before we do, I want to say I have new long-form episodes every Wednesday with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if this episode resonates, my fortnightly newsletter is the best place to follow my latest thinking. You'll find a link in the description there. And if you want to go really deep, you'll find my books there as well. So let's get right into it. And we're going to start pretty high level. And I want to give you some principles for doing real inner work. And this part is probably the easiest of the whole podcast because we've already spoken about them this month in the two prior episodes that I've mentioned. Well, not just this month, it was May and June, those two episodes on the principles for psychological work. We've already spoken about them, but I'm going to remind you of them and I'm going to just give you a few more details. So remember the principle of truth, that ultimately we're seeking the truth of who we are when we're doing inner work. The principle of first cause, which is that when you're doing inner work, you have to remember that there's really behind every sort of pattern or emotion or drive in your life, there is one main cause, possibly two, and it ultimately boils down to some sort of need. Also, the principle of non-duality, which is basically the principle that there is nothing outside of you. And that is, of course, a very loaded concept, which is why I'm telling you to go and listen to the other episodes after you've listened to this one. But don't worry, we'll be fleshing out each of these with examples so you'll know what this looks like, and then you can go and listen to the other ones. And finally, the principle of construction, which is that your identity is basically constructed by habit, by beliefs, by unexamined assumptions. It's constructed in the sense that it's not a given. It needs to be constructed and maintained. Okay, so if we zoom out a bit, what these principles are saying is it's asking us to discover why we are the way we are. And it's sort of asking us to take full responsibility for it. Okay, that's really what these four principles boil down to. and it might sound really simple, but a lot of inner work doesn't do this. Earlier this month, I defined psychological work as discovering the truth of why you are as you are and changing it if need be. And the changing it part is also a part of inner work because, you know, it's something that you're doing on the inside, shall we say. So what about that part of it? What makes that real? Well, to me, it needs to boil down to simple and actionable steps or items. Okay, so we're not looking for elaborate, complicated solutions here. We're looking for very simple things. Not simplistic, just simple. That doesn't mean they're not powerful. Sometimes doing simple things is not easy. And you'll see why as we go through our examples here. So basically, any real inner work helps you discover why you are as you are and then truly change it. Okay? And to me, it boils down to those four principles, the principles of truth, first cause, non-duality, and construction. And the change part really just boils down to simple, actionable items. Now, I know that is very broad, but actually, when you use this rubric to compare sort of any inner work you've done before, whatever method you use, there's so many methods, you might start to realize that actually your inner work is not following these principles. And it might start to make sense why the shortcomings that method has. So you're going to see how those trickle down into the actual, you know, the real work. What we're going to do now is we're going to look big picture at what makes inner work fake. And as I alluded to in the introduction, most inner work is fake as I know it. Now, I know it might sound like a hyperbole or like I'm exaggerating to sound edgy or I'm just being like a contrarian, but it's something I've experienced myself, like doing inner work for nearly a decade on myself. I've realized how much of it was kind of fake. And observing others and working with people, I realize how a lot of inner work is basically fake. In other words, it doesn't help you really discover why you are as you are, and then it doesn't really help you change it. It does something else, and that is what I'm calling fake. When I say fake, I don't want to be sort of a know-it-all and say, well, if it doesn't do X, Y, and Z, then it's fake, and it's just a load of nonsense. I'm not saying that everything that I don't agree with is useless, necessarily. To me, it's just not the core of what inner work is all about. Like, it might do something, but it's not doing what it's not doing what I believe inner work should do, okay? So that's what I'm calling fake. Now, I'm not saying it's not helpful in some way, but to me, it's not really getting to the core of it. You see, it's not really getting to the real issue. And the real thing that's actually going to help you make positive change in your life, right? So ultimately, this is about how powerful these techniques are and how effective they are at helping you change. And if they're not helpful, I'm calling them fake because they might masquerade as being helpful when actually they're not really going to the core of it, in my opinion. Right, you can disagree with me on you if you want, but this is just what I've found and what I've garnered over the years. So let's talk high level about what fake work looks like. Now, at the end of the episode, I'm going to give you like a very down to earth list of like specific practices or things that are fake, but I'm going to go high level here so that you know what to look for in a general sense. So first of all, endlessly delving into the past. Have you ever done this? Have you ever done inner work in it? It basically, you know, this can be in the context of therapy or it can be in the context of like, of doing journaling or something. And it just becomes about you remembering things from the past. Now listen, I use the word endless deliberately because I think it can be useful to delve into the past. But there needs to be a line, right? There's a line between it being something that helps you understand why you are the way you are, which is what I've defined psychological work as being, and when it's just rumination, and when it's just like, it's just, you're just turning circles in your mind. And quite honestly, I feel like a lot of the time it does become that. The problem is that, I mean, listen, I could do an entire episode on why rumination, like why delving into the past is and isn't a useful technique. To me, it serves a point. It serves a purpose up to a point. And after that point, it actually just keeps you stuck in the past. Because when you're talking about the past, when you're remembering the past, when you're thinking about the past, you're sort of reinforcing it. You're reinforcing the person that you were at that time. You're reinforcing all the emotions that were going on. And you're forgetting that all of that is just occurring in the present. All your thoughts are occurring in the present. And you're not having a creative orientation. You know, you're just sort of putting the tape on and churning over again. And unfortunately, a lot of therapy is just this. It's literally just rumination, in my opinion. So anyways, I could speak a lot about that, but we need to keep going. Number two, following psychological trends. This is so common in like podcasts and, oh my God, this is going to sound so like like dismissive, but I just need to call it as I see it. This is so common on like podcasts and social media and like websites and books and stuff. It's like people just jump on the latest psychological trend and then that becomes like their lens for doing inner work, you know. I mean, even something like trauma, I was just sort of talking about trauma there. Trauma is a bit of a psychological trend. For example, diagnosing people with like ADHD and autism and obsessive compulsive disorder and so on, this is a psychological trend. Boundaries and like non-violent communication and all of this. Basically, anything that is a buzzword and you're latching onto it and you're using that as an explanation for things, that is quite possibly fake. Because it's not that these things aren't useful concepts and they're not useful explanations for why we are the way we are, but and they're not useful for us changing why we are the way we are if we need to. But to me, it's like, we're very conformist creatures, and the problem with conformity is that it dulls original thinking a lot. Like, as soon as you're repeating someone else, you're not thinking originally. And in inner work, that's a really big problem, because ultimately you can only know the own motivations behind your behavior. You can only know your own first cause. You can only know your own truth of who you are. You're the only one that can discover these aspects of yourself. And so when you're like latching onto other people's explanations, it can dilute, you know, it can dilute your own psychological antenna, like your own self-awareness, and it can help you latch onto, it can have you latch on to explanations that are simply not true. Like, it's a very sticky one. So watch when you're doing that. Are you just latching onto the buzzwords, the latest psychological Instagram or TikTok trends, whatever? God, that sounds like such an old person. And if you are, I would encourage you to like look at that and see, is this actually me doing real inner work, or am I just like acquiring concepts that sound trendy and nice? The next sign of fake inner work is using jargon while not truly getting it. And I've written down in my notes here, getting it in capital letters. I'm just going to give you an example, right? Non-violent communication. Because, oh my God, this is one of the things that is so misused. And again, like, this is such a sticky, complicated, intricate topic, especially when we're talking about, like, areas in our life where non-violent communication is important, like in intimate relationships, for example. Non-violent communication is so easily understood in the mind and as a concept, but it's not really truly embodied, and you've not got it, like you've really not understood it, okay? So you can, for example, right, you can sit and read a book about non-violent communication and it might sound really amazing, and you might, like, you know, you might learn a sort of list of concepts, like a bit of a cheat sheet, and then you might explain it to someone. And then you might want to, like, I don't know, do coaching with people on NVC. But when you look at your life, are you actually getting what it's about? And actually, are you actually applying it when you most need it? And quite honestly, I've met examples of both. You know, I've met examples of people who are big fans of NVC, and they, you know, they're pretty good. It's really hard to use it all the time and to really understand it and to really get it. But then there's other people who know all the concepts, but actually they're not very good at it. And yet they think they're good at it because they've understood it conceptually, right? Really what NVC, I'm just going to tell you what it really is about. At the core of it, because I've brought it up, NVC is about how you communicate. It's not about teaching others how to communicate. It's about, here is a good way to clean up your communication, take full responsibility for your emotions. That's what NVC is about. Now, when it's a concept, it sounds nice, and then you look at how you actually communicate, and it's really not, you know, we don't have to be perfect, but on the whole, are you using NVC or are you not? The reason that using jargon is a big trap is because it's a lot easier just to memorize jargon than it is to actually fully get it and to, like, fully practice it. And I see this trap all the time. Like, people who are pretty, they lack self-awareness a lot. And they seem to sort of spend their time using all their psychological jargon to correct other people or to put other people in their place or to kind of fix other people, not realizing that that is like the complete opposite of what these concepts are trying to get you to do. Okay, moving on. Another example of fake inner work is overanalyzing situations and people. So, what inner work can do often is it makes you more aware of how you're interpreting things and how you're seeing other people. And it makes you more sort of evaluative of other people as well for that reason, because you're sort of more aware of what's going on behind the scenes in social life and so on. But also what it can do is it can get you putting all your attention outwards, right? So you start overanalyzing the situation, the person. What are they thinking? Why did they do that? Do they like me? Blah, blah, blah. I don't think they like me. I think they're jealous of me, and I've got this reason and that reason and this other reason. You can do some of that, right? But the problem is that, again, you're not really doing inner work because your attention is turned outwards. You see, you're asking about them. You're asking about their motivations, their feelings, why they're doing what they're doing, how they see you. And really, the actual doing that whole process of trying to analyze everyone else and analyze the situation is itself a result of a need of your own that you're probably not seeing. And if you were to see that need, you might not do all of that endless analysis, right? And this is, again, it sort of feeds into the jargon thing. It's that it becomes really easy to use all your inner work and all your psychological terminology and all your psychological knowledge to look at other people, when actually, again, it's not really, in essence, trying to get you to do that. It's trying to get you to look at yourself, okay? Another one is memorizing theories. You know, and this is a huge problem in, like, university students. Memorizing theories. Like, one of my main critiques of, like, how psychology is taught at university. Now, I'm kind of speculating here because I didn't study psychology at university, but I did go to university. And I've sort of know the curriculum. Like, I've studied a lot of the typical psychological theories. To me, how you should really train someone to be a psychologist is to get them to do a lot of inner work, not to sit and memorize theories. And so this trickles down into, like, well, let me back up. Basically, you can have a psychologist that knows all the theories, like Piaget said this, and, you know, Freud said this, and, oh, Carl Jung said this and that, but they have no fucking clue what it actually means, like, on a practical level, because often these writers talk in very abstract language about things that are actually quite straightforward, but they're just, like, you know, they need to sound academic, and maybe they've just not, they themselves have not understood it on a very practical level, so they make it very complicated. And so the therapist or the psychologist doesn't actually know what these things are on a very practical level. And so how can they help you? And furthermore, you can do this as just someone who's interested in inner work. You can learn all these theories and all the blah, 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 but all that hour, 2 hours you spend learning theories, you could be doing real direct inner work. Okay, and it would probably be a lot more beneficial for you. Another trap is getting lost in surface features rather than delving into the first cause. So my principle of the first cause is designed to bypass a very common trap in inner work, which is getting lost in your emotions, your thoughts, your interpretations, your stories, your imagination about things, rather than going to the root of it. Like, I'm going to give you examples to come, so I don't want to, like, say too much here, but I would ask you, in anytime you're doing inner work, say to yourself, am I getting at the core need or the core desire or the core motivation of mine, that is really important, that is driving me in this situation? And if the answer is no, and if the answer is just I'm endlessly analyzing things and I'm lost in my thoughts and my emotions, this and that, then this is exactly the trap I'm talking about. Another trap is seeking to numb the symptoms rather than finding the first cause. And again, we're going to give you examples very soon, but this is so common. Like, for example, you have a depressed person. The depressed person, and this is understandable because when you're depressed, you're in pain, and it's really difficult to ask more fundamental questions when you're in pain and you're struggling. What they want is they want a relief of the symptoms. They don't really want to know what the cause is. Like, they're just not in that frame of mind. They just want a relief. Now, that's fair enough, right? That might serve a purpose. It gets you functional again. It gets you to a point where maybe you are actually ready to do proper inner work. Fine. But in and of itself, it's not proper inner work, because in numbing symptoms of depression, you're not getting to discovering why you are as you are, i.e. why you have depression, and truly changing it in a sustainable way. Changing it doesn't mean changing the symptoms. Changing it means changing the underlying mechanism. That's the problem with a lot of psychological work, folks. You know, it's working at the surface level, at the symptom level. Even something like CBT is working at the symptom level. It's working at the level of the content of your thoughts, right? But where's that coming from? Where's all this negative thinking coming from? What is the first cause behind that? That's the root of it, right? So that's the difference. And again, in these examples, which I'll be coming to in just a minute, you'll understand exactly what I mean. Another one, and this, wow, this is, oh my God, this is so huge. Like, wow, wow, wow. I would be willing to bet this defines a third to 50% of all psychology, like all therapy sessions worldwide. If I'm wrong, then okay, I'm wrong. But I'm just saying, like, as a rule of thumb, 33 to 50%. And it is seeking validation for your states, your opinions, your views, or your actions. Wow. So basically, what I want you to notice is when you're doing therapy, when you're doing inner work, when you go to see a psychologist and all of this, what you're not, a lot of the time, you're not really questioning why you are. You're not really seeing why you are as a construction. You're not seeing that there's nothing outside your own relationship to whatever situation you're confronting at the time. What you're actually doing is you're trying to appear a certain way. You're trying to appear to the psychologist as you think you should appear to a psychologist. Whatever that means for you, there could be like 100, ask 100 different people, they'll give you 100 different answers. You're trying to get the psychologist to verify you, to validate you, to say, yeah, you should be angry at this, or yeah, you were right to do this or that or the next thing. You're not looking at yourself properly. You're not. You're just seeking validation. Now, again, can it be useful to have some validation? Yes. Can it be useful for someone to say to you, what you did was, you know, that was an understandable thing to do. You handled that well. You did what you could do at the time, etc., etc. Yes, because often we receive the opposite of validation. We receive just rejection, and rejection is also coming from sort of ignorance in a way. And the person who is rejecting us, it's just coming from their own biases and their own mind. However, I think the word endless here is very important. If you go in and all you're looking for is endless validation, endless comforting, endless this, endless that, you're just getting in a trap. You're not going to understand why you are as you are. And you're not going to change it, because you're not looking to do that ultimately. When you're seeking validation, you're looking to be validated. You're looking for the way you are to be validated. Fundamentally, okay. And wow, I could give you so many examples. And I'm going to come on to talk therapy later on in this episode, but honestly, I feel like a lot of talk therapy is just this. And I understand that people, when they're fragile, when they're going through a tough time, they want validation, but perhaps a better way to deal with that is not to just, you know, to go along with it, or to suffer, not to provide them with it, but to actually help them see that what they're trying to get is validation. Talking about the first cause, what is the first cause of seeking validation? Well, you want validation. Why do you want validation? You feel confused. You feel conflicted. You feel you don't feel understood, right? Well, that's a core drive. And then all this validation is just an expression of that drive, right? So I'm not saying that validation is wrong. What I'm saying is that endless validation and endless sort of seeking comfort in psychologists, in the therapist, or just in your own inner work, that this is, again, you're not seeing what is behind that, and something much more fundamental to your psyche and to who you are is behind that. And that is what real inner work will reveal. And finally, another sign of fake work, before we get onto the examples, is seeking groundbreaking methods rather than getting your hands dirty. Oh, wow. Doing coaching, this is like, I've seen it quite a lot. I mean, for one thing, people project onto the coach. So they project onto you and think you have some sort of magical method that will help them. And quite honestly, I don't think I do. I have methods that work, that are simple, and that work if you do them consistently. But if you're looking for some sort of miraculous method that will work in a week or 2 weeks or whatever, or some sort of insight that will suddenly change the situation you're in or the life that you have, I'm sorry, but it's a pipe dream. What actually works is slow change that alters your sort of, it alters your habits in that particular area of your life. Now, I know that sounds very abstract, right? But, you know, it's like fake it till you make it. Like, if you want to be more social, well, maybe I can't give you some amazing groundbreaking method. Maybe what you have to do is simply, you know, have one or two very simple methods that you repeat over and over again. And that's it. Don't look for a big groundbreaking method. Because for one thing, what you're often doing is you're projecting. You're projecting onto the system or the coach your own needs for some sort of, your own sort of pain and your own needs for some sort of dramatic change to happen. Now, that doesn't mean that the coach or the system or the psychologist or the therapist is actually able to do that. It's just a reflection of your own mind and your own need, right? And also, the problem is that, again, change occurs very gradually. And it occurs through often quite boring methods that are just repeated over and over again until the method itself becomes like a new habit in your psyche, okay? So those are the signs of fake work that I can think of. Again, I would really encourage you to listen to this section a few times and just sort of let it sink in, let this marinate in you, because if you understand these things, you will stay clear of most of the traps that are found in inner work. So I promised you some examples here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to name some specific sort of problems that a person could be having in their life. We're going to look at two such problems. And we're going to look at a fake approach to solving the problem. And we're going to look at what I would call a real approach to solving the problem. All of this will be based on everything I've talked about, like the signs of fake work. It will all be based on that, and it will be based on the principles behind real work that I've spoken about in the prior episodes. So, first example is that you have trouble focusing. Wow. If you're listening to this, you probably know someone that has this problem. Like, I know a lot of people that have this problem. So, a fake approach would be endlessly analyzing the situation. You know, just overthinking the problem you have and all the ramifications and all the possible reasons why and all of this. See, what this does is it gets you stuck in the surface of it, and it stops you looking at the core of it, right? Stops you getting to an actual solution. Another huge one is immediately concluding that you have something like ADHD. It's a huge mistake, in my opinion, to just conclude, oh, well, I have trouble focusing, so I have ADHD. I mean, listen, I've done an entire episode on the problem with diagnoses, right? It's called When Diagnoses Don't Work. But It's just the wrong way to look at it, in my opinion. Now, I'm not saying ADHD doesn't exist necessarily. What I'm saying is that in most cases, that is not the solution. The solution is not to seek a diagnosis, right? Another false approach, fake approach, is to blame other people or to blame your environment. You know, again, you can outsource the issue endlessly. You could outsource the issue, oh, well, I live in a noisy neighborhood. Or, you know, the people in the library are always playing music. Or, you know, the people in my house are never quiet. Now, I'm not saying that these aren't factors, but if that's like how you deal with it and nothing else, you're never going to actually take responsibility for it, are you? You see, you could work around all these factors quite easily. Like, you could change those factors, you could go somewhere else. That's not the core of the problem. Another one is going to, say, tablets or pills as a solution. Isn't that common? Like, if you go to a doctor's and you describe that you have an attention problem, what will they do? They'll likely prescribe you a medication, right? See, again, huge problem, because you're working at the symptom level, you see? Now, the tablets might help you, but they don't solve the problem. And the problem is not the symptoms. The problem is what is causing the symptoms, right? And again, taking the first cause principle, the first cause says that there is one or two fundamental needs or drives that are causing you to have poor attention span, right? And these tablets, they're the whole paradigm behind the tablets is that there's some sort of neurological problem, right? And wow, like, no, that is not how we want to look at it. Another one is borrowing explanations for others. So this is a problem because ADHD is kind of trendy. I know a lot of people hate me for saying that, but it is kind of trendy. Like, it's a buzzword. And as I spoke about earlier, you do not want to just grab onto buzzwords as if they were like the be-all, end-all explanation for things. And listen, in your social circle, you probably know people that have ADHD or claim to have ADHD, and they might have this entire story behind it. And it seems kind of intelligent and well-reasoned and very psychological, but actually I would submit to you that most of the time it's not, right? So I would really advise against you like getting lost in echo chambers of like your friends and your family and I don't know, like your colleagues or whatever. Really try to look at things from your own point of view. Try to understand why you in particular have attention problems. Now, I'm not saying that the cause won't be the same as someone else, but it's not, you're discovering it for yourself through a process of inquiry, right? The real approach to something like this is to find the truth of why. And again, this boils down to a first cause. So it boils down to some sort of need or drive or motivation you have, right? So for example, you may not be able to focus because when you're trying to study or work, you're thinking about Instagram and you're thinking about watching reels on Instagram. And so you can't focus because you're thinking about Instagram. And then a minute later, hey, you've got your phone in your hand and you're looking at Instagram. Well, obviously you can't focus because bro, you want to look at, that's a drive, that's a need you have, is to look at Instagram all the time, you see? So like, it could literally be as simple as that. Or it could be the fact that you're studying something or you're working in a job that you don't like. How are you going to focus if you don't like it, right? Like, listen, I'm a very studious person. Like, I'm not going to go into the details, but just trust me, I'm very studious. But if I don't like something that I'm studying, I will look like someone who has an attention problem. And in fact, in school, this was a problem, even though I did very well at school. When I wasn't interested, I wasn't interested, right? So See, like, if you just say, oh, I've got ADHD, well, you've just converted yourself into an ill person when the explanation might be something like, I don't fucking like the degree or the job I'm doing, right? Or it might be something like, I need to be looking at my Instagram or my TikTok all the time. And there's nothing necessarily pathological about that. It's just that you've got a little bit of, like, not even addiction, and a bit of a vice. Like, oh my God, it actually frustrates me so much when people think they have ADHD. But anyway, the principle of non-duality is very important because, oh my God, I don't even know how to explain this in the context of ADHD. It's really difficult. But basically, you have to take full responsibility for the fact that your attention problem is something that you have built up over time, and your identity kind of rests on it. And the way you relate to things has that problem built into it through a result of habit. Like, let's say you're on the computer, or let's say you're watching TV, and that's when you feel really distracted. You know, I'm watching TV and I feel myself getting distracted by X, Y, and Z. The principle of non-duality would say that, well, the entire experience of watching telly, that is your own experience of it. Like, you only know your own experience of watching telly. So if you want to know what it looks like to be distracted watching TV, that is your reference, right? And there's nothing given about that. That can be changed. It's just that your own experience is all you know, right? It's tough to understand why that's important with something like this, but I guess what it stops you externalizing the problem. That's one thing that the principle of non-duality does. It stops you externalizing the problem. It has you take responsibility for it. And the principle of construction is that you have constructed this habit of being distracted somehow. You've constructed it through habit, right? And there's nothing, I mean, listen, obviously you can be in a time like the one that we're in now where it's easier to be distracted, fine. But ultimately, you could learn not to play that game, and you could construct a different psyche in which you're not going to, a psyche that doesn't get distracted, because you have, ultimately you have constructed your psyche from nothing. So, you can dismantle it and you can start again. And ultimately, this problem of low attention span, to me, it just boils down to very simple, actionable habits. Now listen, I'm not saying there are cases where simple, actionable habits are impossible. Maybe there are, okay, maybe there are. But listen, I would be willing to bet money on, like, the fact that a very high proportion of people I know that have even been medicated for something like ADHD could solve it just by changing, say, their phone habit, how they work, the degree that they're studying, the job that they do, you know, things like this that have nothing to do with, like, the usual explanations for these things, just habits and how you live your life. Simple as that. Simple as that. Like, again, it looks simple. It's like, oh, well, listen, if I just use Pomodoro, Pomodoro is just like a way of working optimally. It's, you basically work in half an hour timed chunks with zero distraction. You might say, well, if I use Pomodoro, that's not going to solve my focus problem. Well, give it a try. You might be surprised. Like, it's pretty powerful and it's very well known for a reason, right? So it's Pomodoro might get you to stop looking at your phone, and it might get you to, you know, you've got these cravings to look at your Instagram. Well, if you've not got your phone next to you, doesn't matter how much you're craving it, you're not going to do it, as if you're using the system properly, right? You see, it can just be as simple as that. And that's why I think we need to boil things down to simple, actionable items, because often that is the solution. It's nothing elaborate. It's just things that over time accumulate. And all of a sudden you might realize that you work in times chunks with zero distractions. That's just how you work. All right, moving on to the next example. Let's look at the example of chronic anger. So, fake work when solving something like chronic anger. Seeking to calm the symptoms only by, say, doing meditation or by doing some sort of counting technique. Blaming other people. You know, you could create this whole story about why you're angry. You could create a story like that you're angry because your wife is a nightmare, or your wife does this or your wife does that. Now, I'm not saying your wife isn't a nightmare, but what I'm saying is blaming her for your anger is not, that's not like the, you're not getting to the first cause. Misusing jargon for it. You know, you could start coming out with these things like, oh, my boundaries are being violated, so that's why I'm being angry. Well, maybe that's true, but what the fuck does that actually mean? Like, does that actually like reflect some sort of insight you've had into your anger? Or is that just some sort of nice explanation that you heard on social media? Like, you see the difference. Like, maybe it is a boundary problem. Maybe you feel invaded by people around you, right? Fine, that gets you angry. Okay, cool. But maybe it's not. Like, maybe that's just an explanation you're latching onto. And in any case, how are you getting there? Are you getting there by getting to the first cause? Or are you getting there just by, because of osmosis, just because it's a buzzword? Taking the anger as a given, like, you know, you might just justify it. You might say, well, of course I'm angry. You know, like the government have just raised the taxes and they did this and they did that and this politician's in power. Of course I'm angry. I'm not saying you have to like everything. I'm not saying you have to like pretend that the world's perfect. What I'm saying is, you're externalizing the problem, right? Again, the anger is something that you're constructed. And I would ask you something like, well, why does that particular politician bother you? Why does raising taxes bother you? Let's go to the first cause. And you might find that it's different from what you thought it was, right? And interestingly, I think even anger management is fake a lot of the time, because what anger management often does is it gets you to manage the anger. It doesn't get you to understand and change the root of the anger. What it basically does is it works at the symptom level, right? And so for that reason, it's fake. All right, real work. How would you approach anger from a perspective of real inner work? Well, remember the principles, the four principles of real psychological work. Perhaps the biggest one is that we go to the first cause. Why does this person or this situation make you angry? Why? Really question that. Question that so deeply. Take full responsibility. Don't blame them for it. They're just a trigger. They're not the actual cause, so to speak. You know, and the explanation is rather simple a lot of the time. Like, maybe you get angry at your child for not crossing the road properly, not because your child is a stupid little naughty kid, but because you care about them. You may, maybe you look at how you get angry at your child. You question it, you look at it, you really sort of ask yourself deeply why you get angry at them. And underneath all that, you might just find there's something very simple, very plain, nothing particularly remarkable about it, just something very simple and pure that you care about them. And there you are screaming at your child because they're not crossing the road properly. You see? Like, That is what anger boils down to a lot of the time. I'm not saying that it's all about caring. What I'm saying is it boils down to something very pure and very simple. And this anger thing is like just a way of you to try and express that, except you're doing it in a very dysfunctional way. You're doing it in a way that the thing is actually less likely to be, you know, if you shout at your child, they're less likely to pay attention to you, unless that's how they operate. They operate through like the fact that they're scared of you. Often it'll just make them hate you and not listen to you. You've got to be very, very honest with yourself with anger. Like, and it's so easy to blame the situation or to blame other people. Look for the first cause. Look for the real inner reason that is motivating you to be angry. And I can tell you right now, you know what it is. You're just not being honest with yourself. And you may say, no, I don't want to know what it is. I'm not saying it's easy. It's not always easy. But if you look closely, you will find the reason why. And then simple actionable steps. Like, instead of expressing your anger as you usually would, or you're this and you're that and you always do this and you never do that and blah blah blah, you reform it into an expression of the first cause. You know, instead of shouting at your spouse because they've not done the dishes, you could say, well, I feel angry because for you not doing the dishes, because I really want to live in a clean house. You don't have to call them names. You don't have to tell them they never do it, because that's the always never thing is a big trap in couples, but that's another story. Go for a pure expression of the actual reason that you're upset at them. Like, what is it? Maybe it's literally just the fact you want to live in a clean house. That is it. There's nothing else. That is literally it. See how pure and clean that is. And it's something that is very easy for you to take charge of, because there's nothing psychologically painful about admitting that. What is psychologically painful is realizing that you're getting angry at them and you're shouting at them because you want a clean house, right? That can be painful. What you'll find is once you identify the first cause and when you start to express your anger to other people, or to communicate why you feel angry based on the first cause, is actually very freeing, because it stops you getting so, you know, the anger is just like a side effect of not knowing what the actual cause is, in my opinion. So if you know the cause is, why are you getting angry? Tell the other person why and then move on. Now listen, or don't move on, find a solution. I'm not saying this is easy, but what's the alternative? Getting angry and shouting and smashing things, or seeing why you're angry? Also, practice doing first cause work in the moment rather than acting on your anger. So instead of just expressing your anger, before you do that, ask yourself why you're angry. And look for a very simple, honest reason in the moment. You go into the kitchen, you notice the dishes haven't been done. You notice you're about to get angry, you're about to shout at them, you're about to run through to the bedroom and start shouting at your spouse. Before you do that, ask why this gets you angry. And again, go to the core of it. What is it about that upsets you? What do you want? What is your need? What is the need that is not being satisfied? That is the cause. That's literally it. And you say, oh, I want to live in a clean house. Wow. I didn't see that, but it's so obvious. And now I don't maybe need to shout at them. Maybe I just need to go in there and say, listen, I really want to live in a clean house. I know it's a pain to wash the dishes, but I really want to live in a clean house. And it's better for me to live in a clean house and to wash the dishes than to leave them there, right? Now, I'm not saying this is easy, but with practice, it becomes a lot easier. And listen, look at these two examples. The example of you're someone who gets distracted a lot, and the example of you're a chronically angry person. Look at the two examples, and there's a commonality here, and it really is the acid test, is that does this way of approaching this problem, does it help you understand why you are the way you are and change it, or does it not? And if it doesn't, it's fake. And if it does both of those things, it helps you understand why you are as you are and change it, it's real inner work. So to round off, what I'd like to do is to give you some examples of fake inner work. And I want to issue a trigger alert because, well, I basically might annoy some people when I say this. Number one, talk therapy. Talk therapy is often just endless associations, memories, projections, and ruminating. Like, do you come out understanding yourself more? Really, do you? I've done talk therapy in it. Not really. Like, to some degree, I suppose I did, but not really. Number two, meditating for emotional benefits. Again, if this is why you're doing meditation, just for the emotional benefits. And I'm not saying those aren't real, but you're working at the surface. You know, why do you have those emotions? Why is this a problem in your life? Unless you understand that, the meditation will never really get at the root of it. Now, meditation is a more nuanced example for reasons I won't get into, but what I'm saying is, like, if you want to change something, I'm not saying you can't meditate. Let's say you feel anxious all the time. And you can do the meditation, fine, that'll help. And it might even help you get to the root of the anxiety. But also, I would really encourage you to do some first cause work, looking for the root of your anxiety, right? Because then you're actually understanding why. You're not just eliminating the symptoms. Third, medication. Quite simply, when you're on medication, you're not really working to find out why you are as you are, nor change it. Now, does that mean medication isn't useful? No, I think it can be useful, but it can also be totally overused and overprescribed. And someone might take meditation for 10 years and never be any closer to understanding themselves. Four, diagnoses. You know, as I said earlier, nowadays we love to label people as autistic and ADHD and all of this. Again, I've done an entire episode on this, but basically a diagnosis doesn't explain why. It closes the door a little bit to understanding. You know, it makes a situation black and white when it's really not black and white. It has you sort of disown the problem. And it can actually be detrimental because people tend to form victim complexes around diagnoses. And yes, I've done that, so I know what it's like. Number five, trauma work. This is a tricky one. Because, listen, if you've had a really serious situation in your life, yes, trauma work is probably helpful. And you may say, well, all of us are traumatized. Right. But, I mean, come on. Like, there's trauma and there's trauma. You know, I could give you a list of reasons why I'm traumatized. But, like, is that, you know, is it diminishing returns? Would that just get me identified with a trauma narrative, a trauma persona, or would it actually help me? I don't know the answer to that question. But you see, like, as soon as you do trauma work, you're basically saying, I'm traumatized. Now, maybe that's true, but maybe you're constructing it, you know, and maybe this trauma work is helping, but maybe it's just reinforcing the trauma and it's reinforcing your trauma persona and your need to feel special and your need to be validated, right? See, again, look at the first cause. Maybe the first cause is an actual event in your past that you've not worked through yet. Maybe, But maybe it has nothing to do with that. You see, and it's really hard to discuss these topics honestly because we put trauma on a pedestal. You know, we sort of live in an age like that where it's like having trauma makes you special. Listen, no, it doesn't make you special. And that can really get you trapped. I'm not saying you should frivolize it and just like man up as they would have done in the olden days, but also just be careful. Like, don't create this big persona around it. And, you know, you could argue that we're all traumatized, but does that mean that we need to do trauma work? Not necessarily, you know. Again, maybe it's cost more than it's worth. Another example is this I language trend. What do I mean by I language? So basically what therapists and psychologists teach you now is that instead of talking about other people, you're supposed to talk about yourself, right? So instead of using the words you and we and they, you're supposed to talk in the first person, right? Now, you might say, well, why is this a problem, Ross? Because you're all about the root causes of things, and you say the root cause is ultimately a need or a motivation of our own. Right. However, what I want you to do is to arrive to that based on actual insight into your own mind. When you just follow a rule like that, like you shouldn't use the word they or you in a sentence, that's just robotic. It's not based on any insight, right? And it becomes, again, the reasoning behind it is that basically a lot of the time when we're talking about other people, we're actually projecting, right? However, that doesn't mean we're always projecting everything. There is a big difference between talking about other people through projection and talking about other people free of projection. And yes, the second one is possible. You see, taking a rule like that just oversimplifies it. And yes, it might be good as a guide, but again, it's one of these things that's a bit of a trend right now. And it's fake because it's not actually based on any insight. And finally, the tendency to attribute traits to our parents or our circumstances. Now listen, I'm not saying that we can't have things that are a result of our circumstances, our upbringing, our parents, and so on. The problem is that, again, this is often done as a knee-jerk thing. It's like, it's a theory we've heard. It's like a slogan, or it's a victim narrative. It's not based on any insight. It's not based on real inquiry and real self-awareness. You know, you could say that about anything, and it might not be true. It might just be you feel the need to have that be the case, right? What I would say about any personality trait is that it was constructed somehow, so it can be dismantled. And when we talk about things in this kind of absolutistic way, like it came from somewhere else, that just takes the responsibility off ourselves, which is the opposite of what I advocate for. All right, everyone. So remember the acid test. What is the acid test? The acid test for inner work is, does this help you understand why you are as you are and change it? And also sub-principles or sub-things to remember are, you know, does this help you take responsibility? Does this help you be more self-aware? Does this help you get to the root cause? Or are you outsourcing? Are you looking away from yourself? Are you trying to justify it and all the rest of it? So it's pretty simple. But if you do real inner work, what I will say is that you will feel the difference. You can feel the difference between getting to the root cause of something and just attaching yourself to a narrative or taking medication or blaming other people or whatever else. You can feel the difference. Like, it's a very tangible thing when you discover the actual roots of the sort of problems and situations in your life. you will feel it, you will know it. It's like it can hit you between the eyes. It can be very powerful. So it's simple, but it's very powerful. That's what I love about these principles. And again, I'd really encourage you, if you've not done so already, to go back and listen to those episodes 144 and 147, Key Principles for Psychological Work, Part 1 and 2, where we talk about real psychological work in terms of four key principles. So, to let you know, my next long-form episode will be next Wednesday, episode 149. I want that to be a surprise, so I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but it's a continuation of our June and May psychological series. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If this episode resonated, my fortnightly newsletter is the best place to follow my latest thinking, so you'll find a link in the description to that. You can find my books there as well if you want to go really deep with my work. And as always, thank you for listening, and I will see you next Wednesday with episode 149.